Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hi, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and tonight we're going to be talking about Jupiter, the largest planet in our solar system, and actually what NASA's doing with the new exploration it's doing with their spacecraft, Juno. So if you've been kind of in the, looking at the History Channel, all these, there's three or four different channels, actually, lately, that have been doing documentaries of just all this different stuff that they've had going on since 2011. And Juno has finally arrived at Jupiter. It happened actually on July 4th of this year, 2016. And it's just really exciting to be looking at all this different cuts. And we got a co-host, Ms. Gloria, with us tonight. Hey, Gloria, how you doing?
Hi, Robin. I'm doing great. What about you? How's your day going?
My day is going great, and I'm so glad for you to be joining us. I haven't had you be able to be with us for a while, and I missed you. I've been missing you.
I know.
Busy girl.
Busy life.
So we're going to be talking about some of the different things that they're finding out about Jupiter. And a couple things that really got me wanting to talk about this. And boy, there was so much more once, our typical things with these conversations, you think, oh, that'd be an interesting thing. And then you start diving in and it's so much more than you think it's going to be. But one of the facts that I thought was just really interesting was that Jupiter gets 200 times more meteors than we do. And thank goodness it does, because we only actually get 2% of everything that's flying around in the solar system. And Jupiter's like a big mama. She'll protect us from a bunch of stuff that actually impacts on the planet. And because of the magnetic fields that Jupiter has, it actually will, catch a whole bunch of those and then fling them out of our solar system. So we're not even in harm's way most of the time when it comes to a lot of this stuff. So first of all, I want to thank Jupiter. Thank you, Jupiter, for doing all those wonderful things with the different meteors and stuff that we've got going on with all that kinds of stuff. And I went ahead and sent a bunch of information about some of the stuff we're talking about to Gloria today. So, Gloria, any ahas or things that surprised you when you started looking at some of the stuff with Jupiter and the Juno project?
Well, one of the things that kind of struck me was that as they were talking about it, they were talking about making an assumption that they know how the universe was formed and how Earth was formed. And, it's like, I believe that none of the other planets have been explored to determine whether or not they have magma in the center. I mean, we have magma in the center. So, if we were born from swirling dust, I started to question that, because perhaps they're looking at it from a different perspective, or a same perspective, and they should look at it from a different perspective to explore some different anomalies as well in their ideas of formation of the different universes. And so with that being said, they're saying that Juno is larger in mass, and they're looking to explore it, and that we need to understand about Juno to understand how our universe was born, yet they are claiming they know how the universe was born, and now they need to explore Juno to verify that. So
we know we're right, and Jupiter's going to show that we are right. Okay.
Right. It was kind of a mixed message within the professional site from, I think it was the one you sent me. I think that was NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it's NASA's
And the TikTok that you sent, I thought was really nice to listen to. It gave some more information to what I had already been hearing about the discovery of, different planets and the universes and things. This is one more element that really wasn't discussed, and I haven't heard too much about it. So it was really, really nice.
Yeah, part of the things that I was finding out about that is with Jupiter, they're doing a brand new part of their program, which is called JunoCam. And Juno is, they've got a special camera on board that's being able to take, it takes a picture and then it starts slowly bringing in all the different colors. It has actually like 4 to 5 phases when it brings all the different colors together, so we actually get an image, you know, in color of what's going on with the planet. And they're actually, they're really inviting the whole world, you know, whole world community. We've got over like 350,000 amateur astronomers that they're asking to come to the party and be a part of this. They're actually, you know, they're going to be doing these really long elliptic orbits that are going to be focusing going over the poles of Jupiter. And what they're hoping is, you know, asking these, you know, these astronomers, saying, you know, hey, guys, where do you want us to be focusing the camera and being able to do some really tight shots and things like that. And even the, these astronomers are going to be a part of actually creating the images that are, we are going to be, they're going to be sharing with the public. And that used to be, you know, science departments, things like that, that they had affiliated with NASA that were going to do that. But they were just really asking the larger community to be a part of that. And, you know, with that, it got me kind of thinking about, well, what's going on with TED Talks? You know, we talked about Jupiter and things like that. You know, I'm a, just such a fan of the TED Talks. And there was this really interesting one that was called, let me go back to that one. It, let me see if I have it right here. It was with one lady that was talking about the, yeah, here she is. It's Tabitha, boy, I hope I don't botch up her name. I usually do. But, she's a, let's see. What's her name here?
Well, the thing I liked about what she mentioned was the citizen sciences.
Right, right. So it's the episode's called The Most Mysterious Star in the Universe. And what they did is they picked just a small area of the universe and they focused on that area, and they were having a really high-tech NASA computers focusing on these different rectangles of shapes, you know, basically focusing in one little area, and there could be like, I don't know, like 10,000 stars in one section because they were so far away. And they were using the Kepler effect, which is basically looking at the line of the amount of light coming from that area, and every time there would be a little blip, it would show the size and shape of what they were looking at. So it gave them a little bit of a picture of what they were looking at. And, you know, more than not, it was always a sphere, so it was just a little drop in the scales and stuff like that. So we're going to have that available if you go to the transformation-cafe.com when Andy goes ahead and introduces it, so you guys can take a look at all that. But really interesting conversation, because what happened was is she was saying that even with all these high-tech computers, that the human eye has just a really high tech level of being able to catch patterns. And because of that, they were actually finding planets that the computer wasn't even detecting. So it just shows being able to have the human element in all this that really makes a difference. And I thought it was such a good example of, you know, here we're, you know, using the Juno cam and using, you know, the amateur astronomers to be able to be catching things that, you know, these, you know, the NASA, you know, staff wouldn't necessarily even think of, which I think is so great, being able to just bring that to the table and having everybody. Gosh, can you imagine being an amateur astronomer and being able to be invited by NASA to be a part of a project like that? How great that all is. But it just really helps helps everybody to be looking at that. But with that TED Talk, what was interesting is the most, and this is a mysterious star in the universe, they started looking into this one particular area because it was just so large that it didn't make sense. And, you know, normally it would take like maybe a half a day or something like that to be able to measure some of these planets that were out there. And this thing, one of them, at one time when they were taking a test on stuff, it took like over a week for them to actually get the full size of what they were looking at. And they're like, this thing's gigantic. What are we looking at? So there was all kinds of theories that, you know, it could be an asteroid field, or maybe a planet exploded, or they're just thinking of all these different reasons why they had stuff in there. And they started thinking about having an alien component in with that as well. It's like, well, maybe this is a, you know, some kind of an alien ship or something, or something that's out there. So I really appreciated that, you know, it wasn't necessarily trying to keep it in a box, but just going in a lot of different directions of what it possibly could be. And the fact that we're looking so far out into the universe that, you know, and as they've said, you know, scientists will even confirm that it's just like, you know, where there's no way we're the only life that's out here. You know, there's got to be more out there than what we're just seeing for our planet. So it's just really interesting. It just kind of gives a different perspective, and like I said, it really just shows the level of community that's out there, because they call themselves the Planet Hunters, It's an organization that's out there that's really dedicated to just, you know, going out and checking out the night sky and keeping connected to one another in their community. And they work with SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And SETI got really involved in that when they finally, you know, started getting all this data back. And they were just like, wow, this thing is so big, you know, let's kind of put it out there. And because of Tabitha, they were able to, you know, be able to talk to one another and be able to come up with new theories about what they were looking at. Normally, it's the other way around. You know, you have the evidence, and then you basically just are writing your reports and stuff about it. And this one, they were coming from a totally different direction. So she even, you know, comments in the TED Talk that, you know, it's like, well, normally we don't do it this way, but this is what we're looking at. So I just thought it was really fascinating to have that as a perspective that we could kind of bring into this whole thing. You know, here we're, you know, from elementary school, everybody always learns the solar system and all the different things that are going on with it. And yet to have these different things that are just cutting edge and things that are finding. I mean, we're talking about something that's probably happened like about 4 or 5 months ago. So it's really exciting too. And even with the whole thing now with Jupiter, I mean, you're going to the regular sites with, there's one website that's really cool. It's heavy.com. And it's listing, it's actually trying to, you know, giving us pretty much as close as possible real-time pictures that they're getting every day from NASA. So you're being able to see some of the colors and things like that, as some of these really beautiful and amazing pictures of what Jupiter is looking like, you know, as close to real time as possible. You know, it's always funny when you say real time, because you have to realize that, you know, well, you know, we're talking, you know, I don't know how long it takes for us to actually get the pictures. That would be an interesting question. I'm not sure about that, how quickly we get them. But just having that as something as a way of looking at everything, it's very, very cool. So anything else on that, Gloria, you wanted to comment on?
I just appreciated how they were engaging everyone, and, you know, they've continued to engage the citizen scientists.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about the funding and how, you know, they're collecting data. So it's an extra set of how many eyes?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, if we're talking it's over 350,000. So let's do the math on that. That's over a million. A million eyes are checking that out on a regular basis. So I think that's just really cool. And I was talking to Amy, you know, Amy Frost. She's another co-host that's on the show quite a bit, and just kind of sharing with Amy about some of the stuff that I found out about it. And she was just saying, you know, it's interesting with, like, that whole community, how, you know, we have done some couple of different shows on HeartMath. And working from the HeartMath and the way that they did a global exercise where they were having people connecting to their hearts, and that they could actually see how that was changing the energy of stuff like that too, with all these people participating. So it's just, you know, without this regular people just loving science and just loving to see how, you know, they can make a difference on all this stuff, how it really can impact the planet and impact our understanding about science and just how everything's working on just such a basic, simple level. And yet, you know, we discover it and we're like, oh my God, this is so new. But, you know, what's new is old. You know how that goes. It's just being able for us to be able to use this type of technology and ideas that we have to be able to just have that be more of a real time and exploring way that we had it. So, but boy, that whole thing with the comments and all that, I was just so grateful to think that, you know, without a large planet in our solar system, that, you know, who's to say that we would even have a solar system with all the different stuff that's flying around out there. So don't you find that interesting, Gloria? Totally, totally interesting. So Juno is really cool because it's actually the first totally solar spinning spacecraft that they've created. And I just think that's really cool. And what was really cool too in the documentary, you were able to see that just the level of just the technical specialty of all these people that put this together. And there was such a love and dedication that people were working like double shifts when they were getting down to the last few months, being able to have this thing launched and have it be successful in the timelines that they had for everything. They were pulling, you know, overnighters and all different kinds of stuff. And, you know, since they have shot it out there, they were like within a minute of all the different stuff that they've scheduled, and everything's been just going so well. It's just amazing considering that Jupiter has one of the harshest environments that anything has ever gone to, and they've said that Juno is now the fastest moving object in history from the Earth perspective of having things out there. And, you know, it goes through all the different things that they're wanting to do with the mission and what they're working on with all that. But I think one thing that's really interesting is this is the first time that they're actually with Jupiter, with Juno, when they get all done with it, that it's gonna they're going to purposely, you know, send it down onto the planet and basically just get as much data from it until it explodes, you know, until it basically disintegrates, because they know that the environment's just basically going to rip it up and destroy it. So the fact that they're, you know, they purposely are going to do that, it's just like the first time they've ever had that, something that they were going to be able to put together. So I just thought that was just a really, you know, really go out and check out all the different kinds of websites that's out there. So, again, you can go to JudoCam and do a researching on that.com. And then if you just go to Juno Spacecraft and stuff like that with NASA, there's all kinds of really wonderful websites and stuff out there that are really helping people to understand, you know, just real time what's going on with that too. And even with TED Talk, you know, if you go into some of the, there's actually a couple TED Talks out there that are, you can listen to the solar system and stuff like that. So there's, it's kind of unique perspectives of being able to get all that stuff put together and be able to look at all that different stuff. So, and having that just be really, really cool. So I'm going to give you some fun facts about Jupiter. See if you knew any of these, Miss Gloria.
Okay.
Jupiter is the fourth brightest object in the solar system. What do you think of the other three?
False. No.
Huh? What?
I said false. False.
There's three more that are brighter. I guess from our perspective, I should say that, from our perspective. So we have the sun, of course.
I was going to say, is the sun considered a planet at that point?
Yes, I guess. Yeah, from these fun facts, it sure was.
Well, I mean,
so
just based
sun was,
on, you know, how they're defining it, I was curious. Okay.
Right, and you have to remember, it's us, you know, sitting on the planet and basically saying that these are the brighter, you know, the brightest objects in their solar system. You know how that goes. So sun is number one. What do we think number two would be?
Saturn.
Oh. So it was the sun, the moon, and then Venus.
Okay.
And, you know, if you think, and I, you know, I took astronomy when, you know, I was in college. And they always have, you know, with the sunrise and the sunset, you've always got Jupiter and Venus are one of the on the two different planets you usually can see at sunrise and sunset. So that, I think that was part of the reason that they say they're the brightest ones. So, and then one out of five planets that are, you know, Jupiter is one out of five planets that you can see with your naked eye. It's the largest planet in our solar system, and it's 89,000 miles wide at the equator. I mean, it's kind of like when somebody says, you know, $3 trillion, and like they're like, oh, yeah, like you can visualize that. It's like it's, some of this stuff is just like really hard to comprehend when it comes to sense of size. And it was saying that all the planets of our solar system can fit inside Jupiter.
That was the understanding I had from listening to them talk about the size. It just sounds a fantastically huge planet.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Yeah, and he was like being able to try to fathom the amount of size. Because most of the moons of Jupiter are actually the size of Earth. They said that, 200, there were 200, let's see, no, I'm trying to think, where, okay, 1,000 Earths could fit inside Jupiter.
Isn't
wow.
it just simply amazing?
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to fathom when you've got all that kind of going on. And being able to do
well,
all
it would definitely it would definitely help with overcrowding.
Well, you know, that's one thing that people are talking about now that we have Jupiter and stuff like that is you know, colonizing and moving on to some of these other planets and really kind of getting ourselves off of Earth. You know, here we've got all this, you know, private business basically that's getting people up off the planet and talking about some of this, you know, space, involvement and things like that, being able to have just a common person who gets a little bit of training. I don't know, how much training do you need to be able just to go up in some of these ships that are basically taking you up so you can just go to the outer atmosphere and be able to see the Earth? I'm not sure about that. Have you heard anything on that?
I have not.
Yeah, that would be an interesting
thing to look at. I'm sure there's a lot of information out there, but I have no knowledge of it.
Yeah, you know, and just some of the exploration and stuff that they've had going on with all that. So, but if anybody out there who's doing astronomy and want to really get into working with Juno, like I said, you can go ahead and join their team. And they're really just wanting to involve the whole world with all these different ones and with the planning and the processing and stuff like that. And it's about every 20 days, 14 to 20 days, because of the orbit that they've got going on, that that's when they do all their preparation. So I'm not sure how long it takes for them to actually be on the planet, but it's not very long. It's like just a few hours within those 14 days because it's such a wide eclipse that they're doing with the orbit. So they're saying the next flyby actually isn't until like August 27th. So we have a little bit of time to be able to figure that out and what they're going to do. I know one thing that they want to look at is that huge, like, whirling eye that's kind of in the middle of the planet. It's a little lower than the equator. That's one area that they're really going to be trying to do a lot of exploration. And there's, like, five different cameras on board. And one actually can go in, and because it's sensitive, it can go ahead and try to explore what's going on at the core. So they can try to figure out, like you're saying, does it have the lava, kind of the, you know, the mantle base on everything that they've got kind of going on. So just going to be interesting, you know, watching this, seeing what's happening with all this stuff, and seeing how the, you know, like the community at large really gets involved with all this stuff with these plant hunters and, you know, the virtual imaging teams and things like they have that are just kind of working with NASA and having being so good. So next week we're actually going to be having Dennis on. He's going to be, he's a Vedic astrologer. Do you know anything about Vedic astrology?
I have some information on it, but I am not versed on astrology as a whole.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to be coming on. We've been trying to get him for a couple weeks, and we actually had kind of a show that we had some technical difficulties, and he's been gracious to go ahead and put on. And just kind of let everybody know that that's going to happen next Thursday. So if anybody wants to go ahead and be a part of that show, that would be great. For you guys want to call in and have any questions for Dennis, that would be great. But the Vedic astrology is actually based on the moon. And it's an older practicing philosophy than or what we consider with regular, you know, astrology with the zodiac and all that kind of stuff. So I'm excited to learn about it. Amy had connected with Dennis the last time she was in Sedona, and she wound up taking a basic class with it and things like that, and she really got a lot out of it. And I'm actually, I had him look at my chart, and I'm going to be talking to him tomorrow and figure out what that is, so we can have that as a part of the show too, so some of the stuff he shared about that. So I think that's going to be interesting. That's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to do this one on Jupiter. So I'll be asking Dennis about Jupiter. And then when we had our the summer solstice this year, we had a very unique eclipse that happened at the same time. They called it the strawberry moon. So I was going to ask him about that, the significance of having, you know, a full moon on the equinox. I mean, the solstice, and seeing what that was all about. So kind of just doing a kind of a complimentary show with, you know, what's happening on a science level, and then what's happening with soft sciences with the astrology and things like that that are happening with everything. So just kind of putting all that together.
Well, I have a book on, I didn't know that it was, you know, Vedic was applicable for the moon, and mm-hmm. I have a book on astrology, moon astrology, so like moon signs. And
there you go.
It was very spot on. They did it based on the traditional, like Pisces and Sagittarius, you know, the traditional that we know for the most part
mm-hmm.
as using it more. And
yeah.
I was really surprised at how accurate it was. It was really fun.
Well, that's what Amy was saying when she had gotten her session with Dennis. And actually, Dennis has written a book, you know, it's kind of like Vedic Astrology for Dummies.
Okay.
So everybody out there wants
He's
to be like, well, he said he thought he should, actually. I don't have the title of it here right in front of me, but I will for next week. But he said, you know, yeah, we really got to make it for dummies, because it can be such a complicated thing for having it be something that people are really trying to struggle with to be able to understand this kind of stuff. And he's kind of unique in the way he does it, because he actually brings the Western and then the Eastern philosophies together. And when he was younger, you know, he kind of felt like, well, I'm kind of missing the boat, and that's not really the practice of all that. And one of the ways that he got involved with it was with Yogananda. And we've done a whole show on Yogananda back last year. We had gone over to one of his the lake shrine that he has. And boy, he was really, you know, involved with the Vedic astrology, and he actually had a guy that was always assisting him with this different stuff he had going on, looking at his chart and just different charts in general with all that different kinds of stuff. And it's interesting with a whole astrology thing, because, like, you know, Walt Disney, and there's just like so many celebrities and business people that really use it when it comes to, you know, signing contracts and just all different kinds of stuff that they, you know, have some people basically, you know, on their payroll. It's just like, you know, that do those services for them to be able to look at it and say, you know, is it timely for me to be doing this right now, or should I wait depending on what the planets are got going on for me to be doing things like that. So I think that's really good, because it just kind of shows how, you know, we are impacted by everything. I mean, you look at the moon and how it really changes people's, you know, physiological, you know, if you look at, you know, the full moons and how it really can affect people. So it's just being kind of sensitive to what's going on with the planet and all that kind of stuff. So another show that we're going to be doing after we have Dennis was going to be, we're going to talk about earthing. Have you done earthing?
I have not.
Earthing is a practice that's getting to be well known again, and how I got into it was looking at just different practices for wellness. You know, there's been such a so many people that are kind of battling with cancers and things like that, and I've looked at a couple of different books lately that are really recommending that it's just a really wonderful wellness program. So we're going to be talking about some highlights of different things for grounding and, you know, earthing, and a lot of that has to do with walking barefoot and just some of the different research and stuff that they have out there. So it's pretty interesting stuff. So I definitely wanted to do 30
minutes talking about it.
So instead
of grounding, they're calling it earthing?
Yeah, it's basically because it's all about the fact that when we're not wearing, you know, when you wear rubber shoes, you know, rubber soles and vinyl, you know, soaps, all these synthetic materials and stuff that aren't helping you to be able to just get the natural electromagnetics and stuff that are coming from the planet. And so you can't
well, you
be
know,
a natural rhythm with everything.
You know, in the 60s, they were calling that a hippie.
Yeah, I know. Remember the earth shoes back in the... Well, it's kind of funny because one of the companies they have on there is called softshoe.com, and they're up in Oregon. And that's all they do are making, they make like these soft leather shoes that basically help it to where you get connected to the planet. And can we talk about moccasins? I mean, you know, hey, moccasins have been around forever.
And Nike Free, the tennis shoe that they designed so you can run as if you're barefoot and your feet are protected from rocks. I love those. That's my only pair I wear.
You see, I didn't even know about that. So what's the sole made out of?
It's a rubber sole, but it was designed, the flexibility and everything, it was designed according to the, I think it was the Maasai warriors when they run.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that came out 15, 20 years ago, and those are the only tennis shoes that I will wear for working out and generally walking. I just love them.
Yeah, I've never even heard of those shoes before, so that would be good to be able to add on to that show as well. So just all this really interesting stuff that's going on. You know, we're off the planet, we're on the planet, and we're getting grounded, so it's all good. So, you know, love to have your comments. Anybody want to let us know if you're going to be participating in Juno Camp? Let us know about that. And, you know, any kind of updates from NASA or just from the community of different things that they're finding out about Jupiter and how it's really, you know, how is it coming back to us and really being able to appreciate the living on Earth and some of the things about getting to know ourselves better, like, you know, where did we come from and how are we existing when it comes to being that much more appreciative to loving the Earth and how it really is just a part of who we are, because it is. So it's just such a good self. So, Ms. Gloria, thank you so much for joining me. As always, 30 minutes goes super, super fast.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so great for you to be with us tonight. So, again, any questions and comments, you can go to transformation-cafe.com, and we'll see you next time here at the cafe. Thanks for joining us.
Have a lovely evening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.